We are back at Build Live 2018, powered by Channel 9. I'm Christina Warren, and it is the end of the third day, but we have a lot to still of content to cover. We've still got some sessions streaming. But in this break, I'm actually joined by five amazing guests, members of the Build MC program. And this is a program that, that the Windows Group did this year, where we reached out to five amazing developers, each from different backgrounds with different focuses, to kind of see Build through their eyes. And so cameras follow them around, they share their experiences, and everything is being documented on the Build website, so that if you're not here in person, you're watching from home, which you probably are if you're watching this, because if you're like at Build, like be at Build, like, you know, we're great, but be at the conference, you can experience what it's like to be a developer at the conference through these wonderful folks' eyes. So we're going to go around the table, and I'm going to have everybody introduce themselves. So we're going to start with you, Jenny.
Okay, hi, I'm Jenny Cahey.
And what developer focus area are you?
I'm a commercial developer.
Commercial developer.
Yeah.
I'm Lucas Risotto. I'm the mixed reality developer.
Okay.
And I'm Iris Klasson, and I'm consumer developer.
And I'm Rishi Suresh, and I'm the newbie developer.
I'm Neil Turner, and I'm the mobile developer.
All right, so one, commercial developers, is that what we're saying? Enterprise, is that kind of how we're defining that, Jenny?
Or that's the way I'm defining it.
That's the way you're defining it.
That's okay. The sort of software that I'm familiar with.
Gotcha. Yeah. And newbie developer, so how long, how are we defining newbie? How much is newbie?
The way I see it, newbie developer is just someone who's kind of either self-taught or new to the field, maybe not necessarily in industry. So it's kind of the, I guess, the unrefined developer in some sense.
And is that how you see yourself, or is that kind of the lens you're trying to kind of view things through?
I think I see myself as more kind of the cowboy developer,
okay. You know,
figuring things out as I go. So I think that's the audience, hopefully, that I'm catering to as well.
Awesome. And so let's just kind of go around. I want to hear from you guys. Iris, we'll start with you. What was your experience been like at Build, especially, you know, having cameras following you around and kind of being part of this content experience? What's Build been like for you?
Well, to be honest, it's been a bit, makes me very nervous because I'm not used to having a camera following me around or several cameras. And it's a bit difficult to say, act natural. And then at the same time, don't mind these cameras looking at you. But it's been fun as well. It's been quite an experience. And I've had the opportunity to watch some really good sessions and share my experience with people, both online as well as on social media and so on. So it's been good and stressful.
And stressful. Neil, what's been your favorite part of the experience so far? Or Build, I mean, either, whatever.
Funnily enough, it's actually just really catching up with friends and people I know. It's a great opportunity just to meet friends who maybe I've chatted to people on Twitter, but so many people from around the world are here that I get to see, but from Europe, the States, Asia. It's just really nice to see people. And of course, I'm lucky enough to know some people at Microsoft, so it's just great to see them again.
What about you, Lucas? You're a mixed reality guy. I've seen you go on your phone earlier. How much mixed reality stuff have you seen at Build? Like, what's the most exciting mixed reality thing you've seen so far?
Ooh, there's every single little bit of the cool thing about mixed reality is that you can do literally anything.
Yeah.
And seeing what people choose to do with the technology has been particularly interesting. I got to try out some eye tracking demos, which was really compelling. I really believe that it's going to be a big part of the future moving forward. There was an escape room that they've built, that Microsoft has built, along with some analog technology as well, with some analog elements mixed with the HoloLens. And that kind of blend of digital and physical is really starting to show in some creative ways. And it's really, there's so many uses, not only with when it comes to enterprise, but also just seeing how our relationship with software is changing. And a lot of the talks and the sessions actually focused on that point, which I was really glad to see.
See, that sounds great. And I love the idea of both of the escape room with both analog components and HoloLens. But what I don't understand is, as great as it is, and I love the content you guys are putting out on the Build Live website for the Build and See stuff, is why we didn't have a HoloLens Build experience. See, I don't know how far away we are from that, but wouldn't that be cool if you're just at home and you kind of, you know, have your headset on and it's like you're, you know, petting the mini horses and hanging
there.
Out people in the rooms. Yeah,
we'll get there, but there's just like it's such a complicated piece of software. Right now we're still finding out what the basic design standards are, so it will happen, but it will take some time.
Arash, what's been your favorite session that you've seen?
Oh,
attended.
I've seen quite a few sessions, but I think the favorite ones I've seen have to do with kind of how to implement a lot of the new artificial intelligence technologies that they're announcing, and how to implement that on the cloud. Because you know, it's a powerful new technology that's coming out, but I think accessibility in some sense is limited because it requires very powerful hardware to run. And some of the new sessions, like one of the ones I saw today, was just talking about how you can take some of these machine learning models and run them on Azure with just like 5 lines of code. So I think that's really exciting and probably the most useful bit of things.
Is that something you see yourself using in your cowboy coding? Yeah,
it's something that I already use quite a bit. So I just have a computer with a GPU at home, but if I can now run things on the cloud easier, I'm definitely going to be using that.
I mean, your power bill is going to be lower.
Exactly.
I mean, you can instead just go to, like, you know, mining cryptocurrency on your GPU instead.
Exactly. That's how I make the money to pay for Azure. Right? Yeah.
There you go. Ginny, is there a session or a talk that you've seen that stands out from the conference?
Well, it probably wouldn't be fair to my friends who are PMs in the program to think about only one. But
yeah, we'll give us several. We've got time.
Well, I would say that the common theme with my favorite sessions were devoted around how I'm going to take old code that I already have and move it forward. I'm actually going to be able to use the stuff I'm seeing it build. Usually I come to build and I think, great, this is cool. I go build some demos for myself. And then my corporate customers are on an older version of Windows.
Right.
But they're now moving to Windows 10 in large numbers. And Microsoft's giving me the opportunity to take old code and even Windows 7 with new installer technology. And
so the MSIX stuff that Kevin was talking about in the keynote yesterday, and also some of the additions that are coming with Fluent Design to work with some of the older... I think that might have been something, but I know there's some other backward compatibility things that are coming there too, so that's great.
I think the idea is they want the old code to look like the new code on the desktop, so the user feels comfortable switching among different applications, and
yeah,
I'm a big fan of that.
It's all about blending and bridging between the two ecosystems, which is really neat. You were referring to the XAML islands.
Yes.
Yeah, which is really cool.
Neil, there's been obviously a lot of stuff on the mobile front. Is there anything particularly exciting from a mobile perspective that really kind of stood out to you that makes you excited to go back, you know, in your day job or to tell, you know, other mobile developers about?
Yeah, well, that's the fun thing about my title. It's not necessarily that I'm developing on mobile. It's more the transition from mobile to desktop, which is the funny thing about my title.
Yes. Okay.
But essentially, yes. There's so much. In fact, being here, you always say you're going to watch lots of sessions, but you don't get to watch as many as you think. And then really, a lot of it is about watching the session videos at home. But I think as Jenny was saying, the my favorite is definitely Fluent and Composition, because mm-hmm. I've been following especially Composition for a long time. And what is great now after a few years is that we're finally seeing, you know, Fluent able to manifest and use all of this all the APIs that are gradually being added to the operating system. And it just means you can make really nice apps, you know, because I like design, and other, you know, certain other operating systems also have nice design. So it's just nice to see a newer design language other than Metro. So come out of Microsoft and actually have a name that we can pronounce.
Yeah,
so
yeah.
It's really good.
Because for a long time it was just like the artist formerly known as Metro. Like,
yes.
We didn't really have a name for it. Now it's Fluent. It's now, you know, a couple of years old. It's evolving, getting better. So yeah, that's it's always nice to have names, right? Because it's hard when we don't. Did anybody here go to any of the Progressive Web App sessions or talks, any of that?
Actually, yes, I did. So even though my focus is typically C# and XAML, so it's kind of classed as native, I do genuinely like to keep up with kind of the other side. And I might not necessarily be making PWAs tomorrow, but it's just interesting to see how the different technologies evolve. If even just to say, you know, maybe I won't use them or they're not ready for what I want to do yet, I think it is good to be informed. I mean, the same is also true of React Native. Mm-hmm. I don't necessarily have something tomorrow I'm going to make with it, but it's just good to keep an eye on these things and see how they're progressing. If even just to, you know, when you look at C# and XAML and they ask for suggestions as to what we should be doing, it's a case of, well, you kind of, you know, PWA is doing something interesting. Maybe you can, take ideas from that.
So you're a C# guy. How many of you are C# developers, would you kind of say, is your primary
Primarily
thing? All of us. All right, so all of you guys. All right, so
yeah.
What are your thoughts on .NET Core 3?
Love it. Oh.
Yeah.
Love it.
Yes.
Love it.
Very exciting.
Yeah. .NET version hell across different apps. That's a real thing.
Yeah.
I just got a support email this morning that was resulted from something similar to that. I mean, it's something that I really do have to deal with. And being able to solve that problem once and for all, it's going to be huge.
Yeah, being able to have to maintain the two versions side by side.
Absolutely. Yeah. Absolutely. Or to be able to package up your application, yes. if it has some legitimate reason to use a specific version, to package it with the XE.
I understand
the downsides of that. It doesn't get security updates from Microsoft, but
sometimes that's
an option.
You have to do. Yeah.
Yeah, options are good.
Yeah, and I think when you're starting to do some development and you make this beautiful app on your computer, you give it to someone else to try it out, and suddenly it says .NET framework error, not the right version.
Yeah.
We've all seen that happen. So, like Jenny mentioned, it's good that, self-contained package, much easier to distribute.
And then also with specifically with UWP, at the moment, .NET Core, it's used, somewhat, and we end up getting a slightly different version that's behind. So the plan with .NET Core 3 is it's a kind of a universal version that we all get. The releases are the same. So I think that's also very important that, as well as all the other advantages that were talked about, that the platform generally is moving forward at the same rate. So basically, when new APIs are announced, we all get them, as opposed to having to wait 6 months until the next build. Yeah, so it should be really good.
And even having the UWP and desktop support, I think for some of that the desktop package support, I think it seems like that's a big deal too.
Exactly. Although we've already heard a few times, people seem to think that means that the apps will run on different platforms, but that's not the case. So the desktop packages mean Windows only.
Right.
Yeah, but it's really good. Everything kind of being uniform, and I think it's with .NET Core and .NET Standard, it's been something that's been talked about for a long time in terms of unifying everything, having it under the one banner of .NET Core, and it's really good to see that's quite near now. It's not something going back a couple of years, it was quite a way away, but just having .NET Core 3 kind of unify most things will be really good.
Shipping the controls out of band is going to be a big help, too, because then we don't have to wait for all the desktops to get to a certain subversion of Windows. It's really going to help move the applications forward to look more modern. And I think it's going to become a virtuous cycle as users are able to tactically and visually see the advantages of moving to a modern operating system. They already have modern hardware.
Right.
My customers are buying Surfaces like crazy. They just love the hardware. And then they go and put an old application on that's built with WinForms, and it looks, dorky.
Yeah.
So and this is going to help.
Yeah, I mean, that's one of the nice things in having kind of the high resolution support, high density support, and making things look better. And like you said, I think maybe making customers feel, oh, I'm already using this, it's not as scary to go through the process of modernizing what I might already have. It's worth, maybe some of the time. And it's always hard to sometimes, move things forward, but it's worth that because the end result will be good.
Or even not modernizing.
Yeah.
I mean, it's good to have the option to leave things the same.
Yeah, absolutely.
If they're tested, but also the ability to take advantage of hardware that gives them new opportunities. I attended a session today on inking. I had never really considered inking for corporate customers, and it gave me a new way of looking at, especially on a tablet, it makes a lot of sense to have a stylus or pen.
No, especially I think when inking, it can get so much better when we talk about, some of the AI things we were talking about. When you think about the possibilities of that, what do you guys think about some of the Windows ML kind of announcements and things from that nature?
Well, that was really exciting. I went to a session on Windows ML, and I actually... Although it's nice to have the cloud to help out in terms of more juice, but I also like the idea that you can bring machine learning closer to the actual device that will be using it for everything from performance reasons to also might even be security reasons, which for me is I'm more than happy to do some machine learning and I want to test things out, but I actually don't feel quite comfortable putting everything out there. So I like running it locally, and it's really exciting. And the .NET ML stuff is also very exciting.
Mm-hmm. One note on inking. One problem we have with mixed reality right now is that keyboards don't translate very well, especially for interactions with controllers.
Right.
I am particularly interested to see whether those features are going to be pushed forward in such a way that we can actually write on forms using controllers and actually bring handwriting to mixed reality in an interesting new way.
No, that is an interesting idea because obviously I think with the power of some of the cameras and some of the sensors, you could capture, the stroke kind of the same way and convert things, theoretically, or do some other things, or even if it wasn't handwriting per se, other kind of symbols or gestures to kind of help things could be really good.
And it's interesting because even like the simple act of logging in or filling a form is very taxing and slow in mixed reality at the moment, and something like that would fix it.
So obviously, Lucas has a lot of experience with mixed reality stuff. How many of you have used HoloLens, and did you get a chance to play with the HoloLens at all during build?
Yep.
Yeah. And what are kind of your general thoughts on that?
Oh, I thought it was a really cool experience, actually, because, you know, like Lucas already mentioned, the puzzle this morning. So we did that puzzle together, and that was really interesting. I think the biggest application of technology like that is you get to kind of blur the boundaries between the informational world that we have right now and the real world. It's quite separate with screens and reality, right? And I think with something like HoloLens, you start to blur those boundaries a bit, and you start pulling in information from out there and projecting it onto the real world. So I think that opens up a lot of applications that we don't even really know yet. So we'll see in a few years probably what those applications are.
The hardware is going to make a big difference too, like the hard hat HoloLens.
Yeah.
I mean, all of that's a sudden cool. That's looking like maybe something that an enterprise could use.
Mm-hmm.
I'm still struggling to find an excuse, quite frankly, to get a HoloLens and use it for business. But that makes it look like a business device, and that's important.
Yeah, no, definitely. I mean, in the booths, you know, there was in the expo hall, there was a kind of a farming station focusing on agriculture and things like that. And you can see how obviously IoT really plays a huge role in that. But you can also even foresee a role where HoloLens and mixed reality could help in areas where it might be useful to say, okay, this is the age of this soil, or this is, you know, how long this has been here based on its location, without having to pull out a sheet just to have it kind of,
oh, sure,
you know, sitting on top of something. Yeah.
Or if you're in a hazardous environment.
Yes. Yeah.
That's not uncommon.
We've even seen some, like one of the demos that just came to mind was this medical demo that I got to see. And it was basically overlaying kind of internal anatomy onto a mannequin.
Mm-hmm.
So that you're looking at a mannequin, but you're seeing all the anatomy and everything internally. And then they had an ultrasound probe that you could use and see what slices you're actually seeing a part of the human body. And, you know, that I think that's kind of a huge step for something like medical education, because, you know, traditionally when we learn anatomy, it's 2D images,
right,
in textbooks, right? And you have to do a lot of thinking to try to translate that to 3D.
Mm-hmm.
So if you see it in 3D right in front of you, that just solidifies the learning a lot better in your head.
You see, not only in 3D, or you're having to like rely on cadavers, and this is obviously a different kind of scenario where it can layer other things on top of it and then show you that context. So it's not just you see it, but you can kind of understand
it. Can even
exactly
be animated, right?
Exactly.
And I think that's the real part, is that, you know, you see the heart as something that's static in pictures, but it's beating. So,
I take it that most of you have been at Build before. Is this anyone's first Build conference? Your first Build
conference.
That's why you're the newbie and,
yes,
and the cowboy. I want to ask, you excluded, we'll come back to you in a second. For the rest of you, how different is it being here as a Build MC versus kind of being here as a regular attendee? Like, what do you feel like a sense of, is there pressure to try to, you know, project the best kind of you know, experience and kind of show things off the right way? Has it been more fun? Like what's kind of what's the difference being here as a non-MC developer and here as an MC?
There's an interesting sense of responsibility.
That was the word I was looking for.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Yeah, we need to like literally handpick the information that we feel like it's worthwhile for everyone to know, and actually molds the conversation, especially in the case of mixed reality. Like, there's so much happening. We have to find, you know, what are the key important points? What are the things that we really want the industry to learn? So we kind of need to make calls for the entire industry. And as just like a single person, it's actually a big deal.
So for you, this is your first Build, and then you're here in this role.
Mm-hmm.
Has there been anything about this experience that has surprised you that maybe you were not expecting coming into it?
Hmm. I think it's just the experience itself, actually. Like when you, because I've seen Build events online before, right?
Yeah.
Like I've seen keynotes, I've seen videos, and it's interesting. You're learning things from when you're watching the video online, but I think it's just the atmosphere and the people and the connections you can make by being here in person. I think that's pretty unparalleled compared to the online experience. So hopefully through the videos and, you know, kind of the first person views that we were able to give online, other people get a sense of that experience too.
Yeah, no, I think that's one of the best parts about this program is that it does kind of give people a lens of what it's like. Because you're exactly right, and Neil was mentioning that earlier too. It's great to kind of meet up with people that you see from all over the world that you might only see when you come to a conference. I mean, I know I have like my conference buddies that I see, you know, maybe once every other year, maybe every year, you know. But I always know I'm going to see this person, you know, at WWDC, or this person at Build, or this person, you know, at another place. And I think it's great to be able to kind of capture that we've been capturing that experience, that you guys have been capturing that experience and sharing it with everyone else.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Actually,
and also,
think
as well, I think a small point is that When you have discussions with especially some of the people on the exhibition floor, some of the Microsoft employees about different parts of Windows, they can sometimes be kind of more frank about things, or you can ask the background things.
Yeah.
Because, you know, there are things that you can't say publicly.
Absolutely.
But if you have a kind of a private conversation about things, and that helps, you know, because depending on what you're working on, or again, where you think things are going based on the public messaging, and you can kind of ask. And it's just very helpful in lots of ways to be here and to be able to talk to people directly.
Yeah, Iris, you were going to say something.
Yeah, I was going to say, I think although we did capture some of the social interaction, I think one part that's very difficult to get out there to people watching online is all the more, not private conversations,
sure,
but all the conversations you have with people that you see maybe for the first time and you've talked online for ages, or people, Microsoft team members working on products that you really like and so on. I don't think we got all of those conversations, and that's for me what's most valuable with the conference and why I go to any conference, and in particularly this one, because I get to meet a lot of friends that have become close friends with time, and that's always very difficult to get across.
Yeah,
it's a very important part of the conference.
Definitely. I mean, there's only so much we can translate virtually.
Yeah.
There is something about the shared experience. And like you were saying, you know, when you can have kind of a candid conversation with someone and maybe get more insight about why something is working a certain way, that's really valuable. But I think if you can even capture and just that we're showing that those things exist, mm-hmm, maybe that gives people more of an incentive to say, maybe next year I'll be able to go, or if not, build another conference that's maybe closer to my area or something so I can experience that. So what would you guys kind of recommend for people who are attending a conference like Build for the first time? Like, Jenny, what advice would you give someone before they attend? Like, let's fast forward. We're going to be in, we assume, May of 2019. I have no idea. And we're preparing for the next Build. What advice would you give to someone who hasn't been before but is preparing to attend?
Well, I think the first thing is to look at the session catalog and see what looks like interesting topics, and then try to juggle the schedule so you can see as many as possible. But be flexible once you get here, because you may find that the best conversations happen face-to-face on the expo floor rather than in a session. So you can watch the sessions later online if you need to, and focus instead once you get here on those personal contacts. Get the names of the people who not only can be friends, but can also be useful resources for technical information when you have problems and issues. And I would also recommend anybody who's coming as a first-time attendee to look at opportunities to contribute to open source, because that's a great way to take the Build experience home with you afterwards. Once you take that same community, you know some of those faces, you can recognize them on GitHub and remember you met them at Build.
That's great, and that's always a great reminder for open source. I think it's an amazing thing that any developer can contribute to, meet so many people, and just makes everything better.
Mm-hmm.
So, does anybody else have any kind of advice you would give a first-time attendee?
Yeah, well, I mean, I'd mirror what was said, but also if you, because I think we all plan to go to lots of sessions, then you end up other things happening. It's also not to feel bad that you maybe miss a session, because thankfully everything is videoed. But it's, again, just because personal experiences with people and conversations can be more valuable.
I posted a post on Twitter about being an introvert and going to a very large conference, because you can be a social introvert.
Yes, that is a very real thing.
And I think, because there are a lot of introverts in our industry, I think one thing I would recommend if you're going to a large conference is to pace yourself and don't feel pressured into attending every party, and that it's completely okay to withdraw to the hotel room and just relax a little bit or try something out and find somebody that you can buddy up with so you don't feel alone if you sort of feel like you need to have somebody like as a comforting conversationalist to have around.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and the one thing I was going to say is, you know, try out workshops, right? Because there are a lot of sessions, a lot of lecture style sessions, and I think those have their place and are useful. But I think there is no real substitute from just like going to a workshop, trying to implement something yourself, running into errors invariably, and then having the people who made the technologies tell you how it's supposed to be used, right? So I think that's, even on the show floor today, like I went up to people who made serverless and I was like, serverless isn't working for me, can you look at this? And they did, and we actually fixed it. It was incredible, right? So, I mean, you know, get hands-on with technology. I think that's the best part about being here.
Just one little key piece of advice when it comes to the sessions,
talk to the speaker afterwards. Yep. There's so many examples where just the speaker is just like hanging around and no one talks to them. And it's really an opportunity for you to not only ask them questions, but understand how their brain works and develop a friendship. Hopefully you walk out of here with people that you can collaborate with and continue to connect with. Also map out the expo floor on the first day. Understand what are all the things that interest you, because there's so much cool stuff happening at once. They won't be able to see everything. So having a high level reconnaissance run where you can just have awareness of everything that's happening and you can handpick the things you want to try guarantees that you'll be actually trying what you want to try.
Yeah. Well, we are coming to the end of our session. I know we're coming to the end of a busy week for you guys. When is everyone heading home, assuming you don't live in the areas?
9 a.m.
9 a.m.
Tomorrow morning, back to Sweden.
Back to Sweden tomorrow morning.
Tomorrow evening.
Friday. I've done this enough times to know to stay an extra day.
Jenny's smart. What about you?
Tomorrow afternoon.
Yeah. Good luck traveling, you guys. You've done great work, and thanks for sharing all of your experiences online with the community. And you can, of course, check out the Build MC's experiences at the Build website, on the Build Live website. And I really appreciate you all being here and taking the time to talk with me and to share your experiences with the community and for being a part of our community, frankly. Thank you for being part of the Microsoft family and being here. I really appreciate it. One last thing, because I've got 15 seconds and I'm live, so I've got to do a cutout. There's a hashtag #BuildMCs. So use #BuildMCs, follow that on Twitter, Facebook, Instagram, whatever, to see more of this content.